This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Now I found out today that all the words have slipped away.
So, Martin, maybe you and I on Saturday night, we catch a late plane to Brooklyn to watch the Billikens win the A-10 championship on a Sunday and then be there for Selection Sunday. What do you think?
I would love that. I got to say, if they made it to that game, it'd be tempting. Maybe yeah. Dr. Rick would throw us in his plane. We all, three Ooh. Of us go. I don't care if he wants to go to the game or not. Just fly us to New York. Wouldn't that be fun? It's St. Patrick's Day Sunday in New York, going to a Billiken game.
Sign me up. I love the Billikens, but I think I'd like New York even more. So I'd go for
You'd
for
skip
the trip.
Game. We'd get there like, Blousy, we're all wearing our gear. Where are you going?
Well,
I'm not going to the game. I was lying. I'm not actually going to the game. I'm in New York, baby.
That'd be amazing.
Were you in? No, I think Goldberg was actually in Memphis when they made that run in 2000.
Oh yeah,
when they made that crazy run, that would be fun to be there when something like that happens. I would guess that it's not going to happen for them to win four in 4 days.
Well, let's see if we can get Dr. Rick to commit. Now, Dr. Rick, this is a long shot happening, but if the Billikens win their first three nights in Brooklyn, they'd be playing in the Atlantic 10 championship game on Sunday. We're wondering if on Saturday night, you, me, Martin, maybe a couple of our photographers could get on one of your planes and we could go up for the championship game.
That would be awesome.
All right. You could bring Fergie. Bring Fergie. Bring Sosa. It's fine. I won't even bring a photographer. I won't even cover it. I'm just going to go. All right. That sounds like a pretty firm commitment that we have there, Frank.
All right.
No, I'm ready.
We're clipping that tape as we speak.
And along those lines, there is a study out why rooting for winning teams improves your mental health, Dr. Rick.
I know. I mean, that's kind of an interesting concept in that if you have, if you live in a city and your team is a winning team, you're going to have better mental health. So, you just feel better about yourself. Your outlook is positive. There's less depression, et cetera. And with the St. Louis Blues kind of tearing it up, I think we're right in line to start to really feel better here.
And do you think conversely, if you've been a fan of a losing team for a long time, do you think you kind of mope around a little bit, that it actually affects your mental health?
I think it does. I mean, don't you? I mean, when you look at some of these cities that just never could win anything and everybody's just kind of bummed. I do. I think that makes a difference. So I think both sides of the coin are true. But you know how good you feel like when your team is winning, like the Cardinals are on a tear or the Blues are on a tear, and your day's just better. They win, or like in the playoffs, you win a playoff game and that day you just feel better. And then on the days that they lose, for some reason, you're just kind of down in the dumps. Well, now someone's actually studied it and said, yeah, that's a whole process, and that the whole city does feel better after going on a little bit of a win. So
yeah, it's like a collective psyche. You can, like, when the Cardinals are in the playoffs, the city, you can just kind of feel the vibe, and people who aren't normally that interested start chiming. And when the Blues made their run a couple years ago, my mom is texting, when's tonight's game, is back is in the lineup, like all of us who hadn't paid attention all year. That buy-in factor, because that's the fun part, is when you get the fan who's not a diehard when they get on board during a run.
No, I agree. And, people are putting signs up and everyone's talking about it. And again, I think you're right. The converse is true. You're just having a terrible season. You have a bad loss. And everyone's like, oh, this is awful.
Your questions for Dr. Rick Lehman, 855-282-8255. Daylight savings time, health risk, and how to adjust to losing an hour of sleep.
So this is kind of crazy. You wouldn't think an hour of sleep would make that big a difference, right? I mean, you'd say, what's the big deal, 1 hour of sleep? But if you look at the studies, and people have studied this since 2012, more accidents at work, more car accidents, people with memory issues, same sort of thing, people are tired, incidence of stroke goes up and heart attacks. Maybe that was Luke Perry's deal. I don't know. Just in general, just poor production at work. They say that people languish on the internet. So they studied this, looking at thousands of people, and it's very interesting. Daylight savings time has an amazing effect. And the answers are all just what you think. Start a few days earlier. Put your clock back earlier on Saturday. Don't wait till Saturday night. Go to bed 3-4 days earlier, an hour, 2 hours earlier, so you catch up on your sleep, et cetera. So all the things that you would think make sense. But it did amaze me the effect that this had. I mean, when you look at production, worker production, you look at health risks, I mean, they definitely go up during daylight savings. And, you know, it makes you wonder, should we get rid of daylight savings? And that's, you know, a lot of politicians believe that's the case.
Have you ever been to Alaska, Dr. Rick? I've wondered, we try and manipulate everything to get as much daylight at nighttime, and then you have periods there where it's dark for 20 hours at a time. I wonder how they survive it.
It's terrible. So their incidence of depression is through the roof in the winter. They do pretty well in the summer, but they do have issues with lack of sleep during the summer. So, you know, you go to bed and it's light out, you wake out and it's light out, it never gets dark. They have these special blinds that block out all the sun. But the incidence of depression in the winter and suicide is extremely high in Alaska, Norway, these countries that have, you know, the night of the rising sun, where they have 20 hours of sunlight and 20 hours of dark. So it's not good for your circadian rhythms, and living in those climates probably is not all that great for your health.
All right. There was a report years ago about a link between autism and the measles vaccine, but now there seems to be a study denouncing that.
Well, you know what? So the only reason I think this is important is this goes in cycles. So there was a time probably 8 or 10 years ago, and we went through this process where everybody said, you know, don't get vaccinated. And what you think would happen. Polio, measles, mumps, all those things went on the increase. So everybody went back to vaccinating. And then I don't know if it was a celebrity or somebody said, you know what, these vaccinations are bad. So we just went through a process of people saying, you know, we're not going to vaccinate because of autism. There was an article in the paper 2 days ago, 3 days ago, some kid got tetanus. It cost the parents $1 million to treat the tetanus. Kid was in the hospital 6 weeks, almost died, which could have been totally prevented by a tetanus shot. You know, we all get tetanus shots. When you cut yourself, you know, you should have a tetanus shot. So the answer to the question is, A, there's no increased link of vaccination to autism. That's been debunked, and it's been debunked a lot. And B, for your parents out there, please vaccinate your children. I mean, to get one of these diseases when it takes a simple vaccination, vaccinations are effective, they're not very expensive, and they're a lot cheaper than treating the measles or some of these diseases or polio. Please go get your kids vaccinated. They're not going to get autism. Autism, if you want my opinion, is caused from the impurities and the junk we eat. So all these processed foods, all this crazy pesticides, all this stuff, which you can't help, that's part of American culture, is why autism is on the rise.
Now, I usually take all my medical advice from actors and actresses, but I'm wondering, in the medical world, what's the frustration level with this debate? And are there doctors? Is there a side of the medical community that says, no, these are not just some Hollywood wackos, this is a real thing? Is there any split in the medical community on this?
There's always a few doctors, you know, that, and they're usually not MDs, but there's some ancillary thing, and they'll come out and they'll have some of these crazy ideas, like, you know, the zombie blood transfusion or, you know, doing certain things that are just so ridiculous. So there's always a few outliers, and they're going to ones that are going to make the media. You know, the other, you know, 10,000 doctors that just go along and say, yeah, you got to get vaccinated. What do you think? If, you know, science proves this, you know, no one really cares about them. So the bottom line turns out to be most doctors believe in vaccinations, but there are going to be a few outliers. But no one really cares what the few outlier doctors say, where if Kim Kardashian says it, then it's gospel.
All right, a couple of questions for Dr. Rick on the text line. In my early 30s, 2 young kids and a full-time job, I'm trying to pass an important test but having trouble staying focused. What's recommended help?
There's sort of two things you can do. If you really want to get focused, you probably have to go on some type of either Adderall or Vyvanse or some type of medication that's going to help your focus. And unfortunately, those meds probably aren't that great for you, but they will clearly help your focus. There are some there are some supplements on the market that will also help, and they have a little bit of that same underlying. They're called pressors, and they'll help your focus. But I would go to my doctor, and I would say, look, you know, I got to take this test. I can't study. I'm having trouble concentrating. They'll probably put you on a little low-dose Adderall. You'll get through your test. You don't need to take it anymore. But that will absolutely grind your focus. You will be amazed how your ability to study improves.
What if I can't get through a radio show without texting? No, I'm sorry. That's. I want to ask you, too, a big story last week, Alex Trebek announcing that he's got pancreatic cancer. In terms of the ranking the cancers, what's his chance of survival? And is age a factor? Because obviously he's a little bit older.
He's 78 years old. The study, the chances of him being alive in a year are 5%. And the chances of him being alive in 5 years are 0%. So if he makes it 1 year, one full year, 12 months after the day of his diagnosis, he's pretty much beat the odds. The chances of coming, of living a normal life after stage four pancreatic cancer, unfortunately, are very, very low. Now, that's just numbers. So some people are going to probably do okay, but 5% of the people in a year are going to be alive.
How about the analysis on the Tom Seaver discovery where he came out and said that, well, the family said that he has dementia and he'll be removing himself from public life. Is that going up? Is that raising the higher percentages with dementia now?
Well, I think there's two things going on. I think one thing going on is, yes, the incidence of dementia goes up every year, goes up 2.2% every year. So that's a fact. But I also think the awareness of dementia and some of the pre-dementia symptoms have gone up as well. And now with all this testing we're doing, which really hasn't done anybody any good, has put more of a focus on it. It's like concussions. You know, people had a lot of concussions, but you just played and no one ever said anything. So no one knew what the incidence was. So now that we're better at diagnosing concussions, everyone says, well, the incidence is going up. Well, the incidence may not be going up. It's just that more people are looking at it, and I think that's exactly analogous to Alzheimer's and dementia, and they are different. And so I think that, quite honestly, the incidence, even though the incidence is on the rise, what really is on the rise is people saying, you know what, you have Alzheimer's, where back in the day, you know, everyone just said, oh, you're confused, you're old, and people that are old get confused. So I think a lot of it just has to do with the public awareness. And as soon as grandpa or grandma, you know, can't remember their grandkids' names, they're like, oh, the guy's got dementia.
Dr. Rick Lehman, the founder and the medical director, U.S. Center for Sports Medicine, a long time, orthopedic surgeon to the sports celebs, and people want his opinion so desperately that they will walk into the 590 studios. Brian Hoffman, a gentleman, just walked in and said, I have a question. We're now a walk-in clinic. Did this? First of all, we need to upgrade security. Did this really happen?
Yes. Okay. He's listening now in our rack room. He said he has a left-winged scapula, and he's wondering about exercises, I guess, to strengthen it or to improve the issues that he's having. Frequency, how often he should do it, a week, or how often the sets should be. Dr. Rick, your thoughts.
So winged scapula could be one of two things. It could be weakness in the back part of the shoulder blade, the muscles in the back part of the shoulder blade. And for that, you do rows, shrugs, upright rows, seated rows, and lat pull downs. You want to strengthen the muscles in the back of your shoulder. The other reason you could have a winged scapula has to do with a nerve problem. The long thoracic nerve, which is a nerve that goes to the muscles in the back part of your shoulder blade. And if you have a long thoracic nerve injury, then all the exercises in the world aren't going to do you any good. So I would probably do the exercises, work in the posterior aspect of the shoulder. Again, upright rows, shrugs, you do them every other day. You do 3 sets of 10 of upright rows, seated rows, shrugs, and lat pull downs. So 4 exercises, 3 sets of 10 reps, And I would do that every other day for about 3-4 weeks. And if you don't see any difference, you need to go get a nerve test and see if the nerve's working.
Dr. Rick, the book will be out when? And what is the working title of the story of Dr. Rick? Me and Sammy?
So the book will be out in August. It's being released at the U.S. Open Tennis Tournament. And I don't know if we don't really have a title, but the book is really how not to mess up your kids in sports. You know, what we've done wrong over the years, and how to treat your kids as an athlete, and what the best thing you can do to get the most out of your child, the athlete, and not functionally damage them. And it should be good. I mean, it's getting more and more interesting as we're writing it. We've got some really, really impressive people that we've interviewed, so we'll see what happens.
Good stuff, Dr. Rick. We'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right, Dr. Rick Lehman. Let's take a short time out. When we come back, Kurt Jacob has taken Francis Howe to their first ever Final Four. We'll visit with him.